Welcome to the Think Christian podcast. I'm Josh Larson. You know, there's a reason we have phrases like pop idol and rock god. It's just more evidence that there's no such thing as secular. Taylor Swift definitely counts as a pop idol. Maybe not so much Grimes, the Canadian singer-songwriter, otherwise known as Claire Boucher. Maybe not a pop idol, but Grimes' new album, Miss Anthropocene, it has idols on the mind. New gods, in fact, as one of her songs is named. We're going to consider that alongside Swift's documentary, Miss Americana, on this episode. First, though, a note as COVID-19 continues to dominate all of our daily lives. Just in my connecting with our various contributors, both those who work on the podcast and the writers for the TC website, I know the crisis is hitting people in various ways, some in terms of health, some in terms of really extreme economic hardship. Those prayer requests are piling up, and we want to be a place where you can share yours. TC's parent ministry, Reframe Media, we have a prayer ministry as well, a prayer team. This is a dedicated group of folks who take to heart the requests that we get from readers and listeners across all of our programs and then bring those to God in prayer. So if you have anything you'd like us to pray about, COVID-19 related or otherwise, email us at tcpodcast@thinkchristian.net. That's tcpodcast@thinkchristian.net, and we'll be sure it makes its way to our prayer team. So let us pray for you, and maybe also let us offer a bit of distraction. Time to get back to the business at hand, talking about idols and Taylor Swift. Well, I have a chance to introduce a new voice on the podcast, someone who's going to be joining us regularly going forward, Michelle Reyes. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. So this is a strange time of disruption as we're all adjusting to life amidst COVID-19. I want to think of adding you to the team as the good kind of disruption. You know, we're going to mix things up a bit, get a new voice, some new perspective. So I'm glad to have you with us.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, Michelle, you are going to make Texas the official state of the TC podcast because we've got you from Texas, we've got J.R. Forresteros, and Catherine Freeman. All of you hail from
there. Right.
Yeah. So
yes.
Besides being a Texan, what else should listeners know about you?
Well, I don't know if I would call myself a Texan yet.
Okay.
It's coming. It's in the works, I think. But I grew up in Minnesota, and I've lived my whole life in the Midwest, even for college, went to Wheaton College right outside of Chicago. And that's where Aaron and I first got married and did grad school together. So I still feel like a Midwest gal in many ways. And we moved down to Austin in 2014. Aaron is from Austin, and his heart was to plant a church in the city in East Austin, which is a predominantly minority, low-income, and disadvantaged community kind of place. And he himself, he's second-generation Mexican-American, grew up with a single mom in government housing here on the East Side, and just has a heart for giving back to his community in that way. And so, yeah, since 2014, we have been doing ministry together in East Austin.
Great. Sounds like a great adventure.
Yeah. Church is called Hope Community Church. And yeah, speaking of COVID-19, there's a lot of needs in our community right now.
Mm-hmm.
We work largely with immigrants, some undocumented, but also formerly incarcerated, single moms, and more. And so I think it's important for people to know that during this time, the vulnerable, the poor, these are people that are getting hit the most. They've lost jobs, no money, which means no food. And so that's a lot of what our on-the-ground ministry looks like right now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been one of the things, you know, for many of us, disruption is a word that, you know, it's a mild disruption or it's a disruption in schedules and those sorts of things. But for the vulnerable that you're speaking about, it's life-threatening and certainly career-threatening too. So that's important work that both of you are doing down there. And it sounds like a wonderful adventure too. That's what I understand from the people who have moved to Texas. It takes a while to feel like it's home. So
yeah, for sure. And I will say, I have totally jumped on the barbecue bandwagon. I really enjoy Austin barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
Sparkling water. And now I feel like everybody drinks sparkling water. And then when we have visitors and they're like, no, we don't drink sparkling water. And I'm like, what?
I didn't. So I knew about the barbecue. I didn't know the sparkling water was a thing. Okay.
Oh,
interesting.
Totally.
So,
yeah.
listeners of the podcast who also read thinkchristian.net, they're familiar with you because you've been writing for us for quite a while. You wrote about HBO's Watchmen not too long ago, and Captain Marvel was another piece. And then most recently, I think you wrote about the Oscar-winning animated short, Hair Love. So it's good to have you as a writer. It's good to have you now on the podcast. And maybe one other thing we should clarify for folks for the purposes of this episode is where you stand on Taylor Swift, as we are here to talk about her documentary, Miss Americana. Would you consider yourself a mild fan, a big fan, or sort of an outside observer?
Yeah, I would definitely put myself in the outside observer camp. And I think that being, well, so I'm second gen Indian American, and I didn't necessarily grow up listening to the same sort of music that my classmates or friends did. I feel like I've always been a distant observer of white culture and, you know, white music, mm-hmm. or, you know, Anglo-US American music, if you will. And so, yeah, I think I've grown up with Taylor Swift kind of all around me and, sure. And friends who've loved her and posters on, you know, in college roommate dorms and things like that. But I've definitely been an observer. And I think that, on a side note, is really interesting because this documentary is called Miss Americana. Mm-hmm. And the word Americana literally means anything to do with culture or the history of America, specifically United States. And I find this term both intriguing and problematic because on the one hand, what this documentary is seeking to do is take the life of a celebrity and turn it into this relatable message for the rest of us, right? That her joys and her struggles, even her idols, right? That we can watch what she's experiencing and listen to her commentary and be like, me too. Like, this is my life as well, which I think is so interesting about this documentary. But then at the same time, for me as an Indian woman, I still couldn't help but remember the fact that Taylor Swift is a white woman, and this is in many ways Americana white culture, right? I mean, this is the cowboys and the cow boots and the country music and sort of progressive politics. And so it's just really interesting, this sort of like, she is Miss Americana and the type of culture that she represents of America.
Yeah. The title itself is making a presumptive claim, I think is what you're getting at, right? Is that yes. She does represent the epitome of a successful American woman. But you're absolutely correct, too, in that it's a very specific type of young American woman. And to be honest, you know, I wouldn't consider myself a fan either. And I think one of the things that has held me back, some songs, you know, they're catchy and they're, you can admit what might be fun about them. But I think what's held me back is that as a white guy, she's kind of been boring and familiar. You know, this is... It's just, it's sort of like there hasn't been a lot of interest there. But I will say that as her career has progressed, it's become intriguingly interesting in watching her wrestle with this identity that she has perpetuated on her own, but also in some ways struggled with, has seen how it doesn't fit. And I think that's become intriguing as you've seen more of that in her songwriting also. So for me, I would say like this last album, Lover, which the songs that deal with that and her place in American culture and what she represents for good and for bad has made her music a little more interesting to me. And it's what made this documentary interesting. So maybe we should turn to that. And you've already touched on it a little bit, but there's definitely self-mythologizing going on here. But there's also some honesty, I think. It's so hard because this is one of those documentaries where clearly she has ultimate creative control. So you know what we're seeing at the end of the day is what she wants us to see, even the behind-the-scenes little glimpses or the revealing or the vulnerable moments, you know, have been pre-approved. So I'm just wondering, kind of continuing where you were going there with her holding herself as this representative, how you balanced in the documentary itself the self-mythologizing moments and the sort of honesty and the relatability you were talking about, where you maybe could say, I see her struggle and I can empathize with it a little bit.
Yeah. So this is really interesting because Miss Americana is the most like recent iteration in terms of celebrity documentaries on Netflix, right? And so even when watching this, I still had Beyoncé's Homecoming in yes. my mind as well. And when you compare those two back to back, they're so different, right? Because Beyoncé, she's coming out with this declaration of her power and her control and her unique role within Black history. And, you know, New York Times wrote about it, just Beyoncé wanting us to see her as this perfectionist and just her Black power. And also the hardest working person in show business, right? And I feel like with Miss Americana, it's all about taking away the facade and letting us see the struggles. And certainly, like you were mentioning, this is all crafted and constructed, and Taylor Swift wants us to see her in this way. But there's something different that Taylor is doing about trying to let us see the girl behind the show as opposed to the person who has the most power in the room. And so that, I think, also is a reflection of her engagement with, you know, white culture, white U.S. American culture. I don't know if that fully answers your question, but for me, watching Miss Americana, I couldn't help but compare it to Beyoncé.
Yeah, that absolutely came to mind for me as well. And they're very distinct in those ways you mentioned. But even Homecoming did have some of those backstage moments where it was, I don't want to say faux vulnerability, but you could tell that it had been constructed to give us that peak of someone who has let their guard down a little bit. And pop stars as big as Beyoncé or Taylor Swift, you do wonder how far that guard can really go down when the camera is on. And that's not to blame them for that. I mean, you understand the position they're in. And this kind of brings us to the theme of idolatry, I think, because it struck me watching Miss Americana that there are a couple of elements of idolatry at play here. So you have Taylor Swift as an idol herself, right?
Right.
There's that scene, the awestruck fans. I think she might be in Japan in that one sequence,
yes,
where they come through a line. They're crying.
Literally weeping.
Yes. And how about the couple where he proposes to her in front of Taylor Swift? I don't even know why, because they don't ask Taylor to do anything. She's just, I guess, the witness.
Right.
But that speaks to, you know, how she herself can become an idol for some people. But the other way this works is to look at, in Miss Americana, the idols that Swift herself holds. And the most obvious one might be fame. So much of this is self-mythologizing to hold onto that fame, to manage that fame. But maybe it's even more specific. She talks about this desire to be thought of as a, quote, nice girl, and how this maybe connects with the American subculture she grew up in that you've been referring to, Michelle. But that wanting to be a nice girl meant she had to let others take charge of her career, or she had to hold back certain political opinions she had so she wouldn't upset anyone. And she uses an interesting phrase at one point when she talks about moving beyond the nice girl image. She said, I had to deconstruct an entire belief system. And I just thought that was, you know, the religious phrasing of that actually made my ears perk up, but it did make me think that there are some idols maybe that she's serving as well because of who she is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I was watching this documentary with that in mind, and I felt like two idols in particular stood out. The idol of approval, which you mentioned, and then also this idol of being at the top. And I think in terms of the idol of approval, the opening scene of this documentary is very powerful because it opens up with Taylor Swift in her room playing the piano with a cat, right? And she's wearing pink, and there's this like mise-en-scène to the whole atmosphere, right? The visual scenery where it's all very childlike or maybe even childish. And it reminded me, in a sense, of Britney Spears' beginnings, right? We're supposed to see her as innocent, and she herself is projecting that image. And her immediate commentary is she starts talking about her moral code and about her need to be thought of as good, you know, do the right thing, be the good girl. And then we see how this plays out in the documentary. And like you were mentioning, she tries to be quiet, only talk about her music, you know, no politics, don't do the edgy, rebellious things, be healthy, look skinny, get everyone to like you, climb the celebrity ladder, win all the awards. And we see how in the end, both of those idols of approval and making it to the top are unfulfilling, right? And on the one hand, she can't make everyone happy. And that's really hit home by Kanye West's engagement and treatment of her. But then on the other hand, there's also this question of, if I do reach the top, then what? All those awards she wanted to achieve, she then gets. And then there's that moment where she hits the top and she has nobody to celebrate with. And just that loneliness that she experiences. And so I think throughout the course of the documentary, we get to watch Taylor Swift verbally process these struggles. But by the end, she chooses to let go of that need for approval. Or at least that's the message that she wants us to see, is that she's chosen to let go of that need to have approval and grow into a woman who's more confident in her own voice. And so I think that, in a sense, is like the big picture, like the 20,000 level foot picture of the documentary.
Yeah. And the tough thing about it is that's the trajectory. And, you know, it's a common celebrity arc we see in biopics, you know, this having to learn that fame is not going to feed you ultimately. And she does follow that arc. I think you're right. The most interesting things about the movie is when she's processing, you see this development, this awareness in real time. I think that is genuine. The catch might be, and hopefully our hope is that it is, right? And that she has reached this place of peace with her position as a pop idol. But because this is all taking place in a documentary, there's that, yeah, but at the bottom. You know what I mean? Like, this is this is not a private epiphany. This is a publicly shared epiphany to send a message that is probably a good one and one we agree with, one we hope for. But you just wonder, is this maybe a different way of painting the same stuff? Or is this a new step in the cycle?
Sure. Where, in gaining approval.
yeah. That's kind of the fear, right? And,
yeah.
And it's something we're all susceptible to. Obviously, I can't imagine the intensity that someone like Taylor Swift or Beyonce feels that need for approval once you've had it at that level. But it's something I think we all experience and, you know, all want to seek that approval. And it's something that, you know, the Christian message speaks to directly, is that we're not going to earn God's approval because we had it before we were even created. And there's great comfort in that. But in this fallen world, it's sometimes hard to feel that. So I watched Miss Americana long before, you know, the COVID-19 situation had become as heightened as it was, certainly in North America. And talking about it and thinking about it now, where we're at now, brought a question into my mind I want to throw at you, Michelle. And it's a little different from maybe where we thought we might have been going. But I wonder, at a time like this, is it more or is it less tempting to turn to idols? Because, you know, Christians, we find our comfort in God because we believe in a God who provides. And we've seen that God provides across generations. So we have that testimony. But Christianity is also a religion of promise, which means, you know, of hope in the life to come. So something not necessarily we can see right now. And I just wonder if it's tempting to turn now to more tangible things at a time like this. So things like pop stars, things like fame, things like toilet paper. I mean, is it easier to make
the
idols?
Idol of toilet paper.
I don't know. It's maybe a weird question, but in context of Miss Americana and where we're at, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I think in crises like this, we usually come down into one of two camps, right? And all of this, I think, requires nuance, but we can have the idol of security, right? You know, we need to take care of ourselves. We need to protect our own, our families, our kids. And I'm not necessarily saying that there's anything wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with going and making sure your pantry is stocked and you have toilet paper, but we can idolize that security to the extent that we don't want to care for anyone else. We don't want to love our neighbors or even caring for ourselves at the cost of our neighbor. So I think that's on the one side. And I think on the other hand, we can idolize justice in the sense that there is a huge need for caring for the vulnerable and the poor. And a lot of my friends are in that circle. And so I feel like I can speak into that. And that is also just as important. But we can also idolize that in the sense of, do we do what we do to get the likes, right? You know, in Matthew, it talks about, you know, like when you pray to our Father, like do it in secret so that people aren't like, wow, like, you know, look at how amazing you are. And so even on that side, you know, are we caring for the poor and the vulnerable because we really feel like we're doing this to serve and honor God, or because we want people to see us serving others and to get that praise? And so I think those are two different idols, two very good things, right? Caring for our family and caring for our neighbor, but we can idolize them both differently.
Yeah. So it's a balance that's important. And yeah, what you were talking about in terms of, you know, caring for our neighbor, if that becomes something we're doing as a performance, is problematic, which kind of brings it back to Taylor Swift a little bit.
Yes.
anything else about Miss Americana that you wanted to throw in there as we wrap up? Any other thoughts, maybe unrelated to idolatry, but just what you thought of the documentary?
Yeah, because I'm more of an observer and I haven't, you know, been chronicling Taylor's life with her, which is interesting that a lot of her fans have. And she talks about that in the documentary about how, like, her story is their story and they're like growing together. And so her songs are like speaking to them and vice versa. But I hadn't realized that she had taken a year to step back and that she was like working through a lot of that bitterness and anger and trying to figure out who she was. And so I thought that was also very interesting, just that time that she stepped back to reassess who she was. And there has to be some authenticity to that, you know, that in and of itself couldn't be a performance. So I found that very interesting, just this time away. And now she's come back. And now here's the message that she wants us all to hear.
Yeah, you have to think for someone like that to willingly remove yourself from the spotlight. There has to be great relief in that, which is, I think, it seems to be what she found, but also a ton of fear because there is no guarantee that spotlight is going to come back. And maybe that would be a good thing. You know, maybe that would be the healthiest thing, but to take that risk is enormous. And yeah, I think there's a lot of genuine vulnerability during that part of the documentary. I think with films like this, you'll find the honesty and the vulnerability in the little asides more than you will in the planned stage set pieces, or even it's not script, but sometimes some of the dialogue can feel scripted, like this is what I want to say here. And it is in some of those moments where the camera is capturing them, as you said, like when she takes that time off and is really removed from the maelstrom of fame, that you do get to see some honesty. So yeah, I don't know if Miss Americana made me necessarily a bigger fan of Taylor Swift, but I do feel like I understand, you know, her journey and her process and, you know, honestly, her music a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely. And I do think what is interesting is that, you know, this got released January 31st. And in the days and weeks that followed, I felt like I was seeing kind of across social media, but even in blog posts, so many people talking about how they deeply resonated with this documentary. And so I think that the exploration of idols and celebrity fame, rising the social ladder, awards, accolades, like that is something that does deeply resonate with all of us. And I think oftentimes we think these things, Taylor Swift was actually verbalizing them.
Yeah.
And then, of course, experiencing them at the highest level. And even though the rest of us are not celebrities, we can still struggle with these same idols of approval and wanting to reach the top, making everyone happy, gaining followers, especially with where we're all at with social media right now. And I think if there is a message that resonates, and particularly a biblical message that resonates, is that for our own emotional, physical, mental, and spiritual stability and health, we have to break out of that cycle, kind of like she did, even if that means, you know, stepping into the wilderness a bit to break free. But for us as Christians, this means laying our idols down at the feet of Jesus, right? And a desire to give him glory and honor so that when people see us, they see Christ. So I do think that in that sense, the message deeply resonated with me as well. And this doesn't mean that we don't do our jobs well, whether we're a writer or teacher or pastor or musician. It just means that we work hard and seek God's glory instead of our own.
Yeah, place those things in the proper perspective, the perspective they deserve.
Absolutely.
For sure. So if you are a bigger fan of Taylor Swift, then it sounds like you maybe want to go to the Think Christian website, because we have written about her stuff a lot at thinkchristian.net. Lover, of course, we did write about Reputation. There's an essay on, and then one of my favorite headlines we've had, Look What You Made Me Do, John Calvin by Way of Taylor Swift. So some good stuff for people to check out at thinkchristian.net. Michelle, thank you so much. I really am thrilled to have you become part of the podcast team and look forward to having you on again sometime down the road.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. I'm going to hit the big time, going to be a big star someday. Yeah. Mama came to the door with a teardrop in her eye. Johnny said, don't cry, Mama. Smiled and waved goodbye.
That was Bad Company, one of the giants of 70s FM rock, with their spin on the classic runaway rock star Tragedy Power Ballad. Such a great song, and so well delivered. I mean, you couldn't get much bigger than Bad Company, whose four members had all come from other successful rock bands. But even as a kid, I always found it kind of ironic as I strummed my air guitar and sang along, fantasizing about one day being on stage in front of thousands, that the underlying song that propelled that band's fame was about the danger of letting fame become an idol. Coming out of that conversation about Taylor Swift and her recent Netflix film, Shooting Star felt like the perfect song to set up this episode's corresponding playlist. Hi, I'm John J. Thompson, and seeking significance is certainly no new part of the human experience, of course. But dang, if pop culture hasn't found a way to crank our ability to turn anything, even good things, into idols up to previously unimaginable levels. If, as John Calvin so famously said, the human heart is truly an idol factory, then it might be true that our modern music culture has simply cranked up the production in those factories to a volume and intensity we can't possibly keep up with. This episode's mix includes songs that look at all kinds of things, even very good things, that become idols when our love of them gets out of control. Fame, money, sex, power, prestige, even religion. As I said in my book, Jesus Bread and Chocolate, there is no good thing that sin can't twist into a pair of handcuffs if we aren't careful. You'll find Kendrick Lamar, Pete Yorn, John Lennon, Nine Inch Nails, Foo Fighters, Rob Zombie, Jill Scott, U2, and much more. And if you haven't heard Janelle Monáe's creepy concept tune, Take a Bite, you might never look at your tech the same way. You'll hear a bit of that one later here on the podcast. To listen along, just search for the Think Christian profile on Spotify and follow it. You'll find this list on the latest episode right now, but it's also listed on its own mix separately. And don't forget to queue up the archives playlist if you're looking for a longer jam. You can also find the links in our emails. And if you think of any great songs that touch on the theme of idols, tweet at me at John J. Thompson, and I will take your suggestions under advisement. Until next time, this is John J. Thompson saying turn it up and keep it real.
Eric Danielson is back on the program to discuss an incredibly strange album, one that I think would probably be odd and unsettling, even if we weren't living life right now amidst the coronavirus. Eric, I don't know if it was fair to ask you to consider Grimes' Misanthropocene, which could be described as an end times work at a time like this, but you're here, and I'm grateful to have you help me wade through this one.
Sure thing, yeah.
And I think maybe what would be good, neither of us are experts in Grimes music, so I think it would be good to start to set the table by reading from Joel Mayward's TC Post, which we just published today. So he did a really good job of kind of providing some of the context for what is a complicated album. Here's what he wrote. The fifth album from Canadian musician Claire Boucher, Misanthropocene, is an ambitious concept project about the urgent dangers of climate change and unrestrained technological expansion. Grimes' website has been taken over by the album's eponymous deity, the self-declared goddess of climate crisis. There's a poetic manifesto declaring global warming is good, as well as links to what are deemed the new gods of this age: social media, artificial intelligence, political apathy, gaming, addiction, digital lust, and so on. Even with a cursory listen to the music, you can't help but pick up on the religious language and symbolism, as well as a semi-cynical campiness. Angels, demons, heaven, hell, aliens, cyborgs, all of these are apparent in what Grimes calls her ethereal new metal artwork. So, Eric, that gives us some sense of the ideas, I think, at play behind this album, but maybe we should start by simply describing the sound. What would you say to someone if they asked you, you know, what does the new Grimes album sound like? How would you kind of give them a taste of that?
I would probably laugh and then say, how much time do you have? It's a really interesting album musically, and there's a lot to like here. I do think it's interesting. It's kind of a concept album, an attempt at a cohesive album statement, but in a singles era. I feel like there's a lot of musical variety in this record. I think, you know, she mostly majors in sort of dark synthy pop music, but there are songs that are, you know, based around the acoustic guitar. There are things that are very fast and frenetic and other things that are very slow and spacious. And so it's just a really interesting record in that, again, yeah, I think all the songs are very different sonically, but she finds ways to unite them, yeah, both musically and obviously with this overriding theme.
Yeah, I think it does go in different directions here or there. To me, when I think back on it after listening to it a couple times, I do get the sense of that synthy wave that just kind of keeps going back and forth. And her voice definitely plays into that. I would describe it as an apocalyptic sedative. You almost don't notice that the end of the world is going on because of the musicality, that lulling element to it, peacefulness. Her voice is, it's a little strange in a soothing way. And it's not till you really pay attention, I think, that you realize there's some scary stuff going on in these songs. I can totally see myself falling asleep to this album, you know, having on the background and falling asleep to it. But I don't know if I'd like the dreams that would result, you know?
I worry that you would wake up in the middle of it and be in a panic, but...
exactly.
Yeah, I think you're right with that. And I think, you know, another one of the musical hallmarks is just that she does a lot of really interesting things with her voice. A lot of times in the record, it stays in kind of the mid-register and is very soothing, but there's also really high and almost kind of cartoonish vocals that come in throughout the record that kind of hint at, you know, maybe some of the trouble or some of the... just some of the issues that are, you know, kind of flitting around what's going on. Probably my favorite song on the record musically is the opening track, So Heavy I Fell Through the Earth. And I thought it was really interesting. I was reading some of the annotations on the lyrics website Genius, and it quoted Grimes saying that she was trying to make a hard Enya song. And I thought, well, that's actually not a terrible description for the rest of the record, that it has that ethereality to it, but in a way that is, you know, pretty ominous and pretty persistent.
That is perfect, actually. Leave it to the artist herself to nail right, the perfect exactly. phrase. Yeah, hard Enya, that is it. So let's spend a little time on another song that I think probably applies most to this idea of idols that we've been exploring on this episode. And it is New Gods. It's kind of the one that brings together some of those ideas Joel wrote about where I read earlier. And I'm curious, Eric, when she does sing essentially to these new gods, there's a push and pull there. Like she wants to believe in them, but also expresses, you know, an experience that they failed. And again, the sense is that these are some of the modern technological advancements that we find ourselves in. Do you get a sense throughout this album if she believes in them? Or is the album, because again, Grimes is sort of taking on this persona or projecting this persona, does the album want to undermine these gods? Does it believe in them? Does the album offer any sort of alternative to them if it is undermining them? I don't know. Did you get any sense as to what direction it might be going in those questions?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really complicated. I think that she vacillates kind of from song to song, and maybe sometimes even within songs, between sort of a hopefulness and a nihilism. And I think on that song specifically, New Gods, I mean, she sings the line, only brand new gods can save me. And I think there's a dual, I at least read it with kind of a dual meaning. I think that on the surface, she wants to believe that. She wants to believe that those, you know, new gods that are referenced to throughout the record can be salvific. But she, I feel like the whole record in so many ways is her underlining kind of the ways they failed and then the false choices that we've been given for our salvation. And so I almost read it in another way where she's saying, we've had these new gods, but we're going to have to even reinvent and get newer ones because these ones aren't working. And it seems like toward the end of the record, one of the later songs is, you know, I adore you, I think is how you would say it, but it's, you know, letters, I-D-O-R-U. And it seems in that one that she's just basically saying the only hope we have for salvation is love in some way. And so I think she kind of ends the record with this sense of like, yeah, we're not there yet. And as much as I want to believe that these gods are going to pull us through, we're probably going to have to create some new ones because these ones aren't quite working.
Yeah, there is a note of hope there, but you're right. It's almost a desperate one and one that falls back on, you know, human connection, which can be something that's a reflection of our connection with God and hopeful for us in a Christian way. It could also be seen as, you know, this idea that if humans are all we have, then loving one another is all we can do. And there's a sense of hopelessness to that, I think.
Yeah, I think too, in that last track, it starts out very bright. The synthesizers are very bright, and it almost reminded me of Birdsong. And then she actually does track Birdsong into the song. And I think there's also that sense, right? Almost like kind of a naturalistic, you know, you think of like a, I don't know, maybe even like a Thoreau or somebody saying like, you know, if we can regain this connection to nature, if we can find that love that you were just talking about, but the love that's kind of shared among all creatures, then that's our hope. But yeah, it's still hard to say that it ends on an ultimately hopeful note, because she's been, for all the songs ahead of that, mourning the fact that those connections are being severed, that we're severing them. And so, yeah, I think there's this call to kind of this like cosmic unity, but maybe I wouldn't want to put this whole weight on Grimes or a pop record, but you know, there's a lack of solutions for how to recover that. There's not really a sense of how we're going to get that back.
Yeah, Joel actually ends his post on TC kind of exploring I Adore You as well, and making this distinction really between Grimes' apocalypse, the vision that the album offers, and the one envisioned by John the Seer in the book of Revelation. So if listeners are interested in digging more deeply into this really dense album, I would encourage them to check that article out at thinkchristian.net. Eric, yeah, I appreciate you kind of wading through it with me. This was one that kind of stretched my boundaries a little bit in listening and trying to process. So good to have you alongside.
Yeah, it was both a pleasure and a panic, so I appreciate it.
That's Take a Bite, B-Y-T-E, from Janelle Monáe. It's a song on her album, Dirty Computer. What's one of your idols? Computers? Screens? Janelle Monáe? A selfish sense of security in this time of COVID-19, as Michelle Reyes suggested in our Taylor Swift conversation? If an idol is anything other than God, in which we put our worth and our trust, then chances are we each have a few lying around. It was really fun to have Michelle on the podcast for the first time. Thanks to her, and also thanks to Eric Danielson. You can find them both on Twitter. Michelle is Dr. Michelle Reyes. Eric is Eric Danielson. That's A-A-R-I-K. Thanks also to John J. Thompson for putting together another Spotify playlist for this episode. You can hear Janelle Monáe, Bad Company, and a bunch more. Just search for the Think Christian playlist on Spotify. You can also follow TC on Facebook and Twitter, find us at Think Christian, and send us some feedback. Or if you care to, we'd also like to hear those prayer requests. Send them to tcpodcast@thinkchristian.net. One last thing on the pop culture horizon I wanted to be sure to note. Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker is now out on DVD and Blu-ray. Just in time, we've updated our Theology of Star Wars ebook. So it now includes essays on all 9 of the Skywalker films, plus original character illustrations by the extremely talented Skylar Rosenbaum. You have got to see this thing on an iPad. Looks great. Those essays are really strong. And it's all free. So get your copy of our Theology of Star Wars ebook at thinkchristian.net/Star Wars. The Think Christian podcast is a production of Reframe Media, a family of programs designed to help you see your whole life reframed by God's gospel story. Visit reframemedia.com for more info. Our audio engineer and post-production supervisor is John Reeder, and Reframe's co-director overseeing content strategy is Robin Baslin. Thank you so much for listening. We'll get together again soon to consider how another aspect of our pop culture fandom connects with our faith. Lastly, a note of thanks to the Communication Arts Department at Trinity Christian College in Palos Heights, Illinois, which provided the recorded space for this episode. Learn more at trnty.edu, and go Trolls.